Catherine wasn't called the Great for nothing. This famous queen of Russia earned a dark reputation as a warmonger with an unnatural sexual appetite. That's a quote. But modern experts, and anyone who watched The Great with Elle Fanning, know that that's not the whole story. As always, the truth is much more complicated. And in Catherine's case, much more exciting.
So giddy up and ride along as we gallop through Catherine's life. We'll watch her jockey for power, say nay to her idiot husband, romance plenty of studs and stallions, and then, after one of history's most sublime plot twists, even take the reins over Russia. Yes, those are horse puns. Some of you know why. Others, well, you'll just have to stay tuned to learn, because the reveal is pretty amazing.
Hello and welcome to Yesterday's News, a podcast brought to you by factinate.com. I'm Dancy.
I'm Veronica.
And this series has one goal, to make history fun. Because it turns out that when you take away the old words and the fancy titles, anyone who made history was probably a bit of a hot mess.
This week, as part of our first season on our favorite queens in history, we're discussing the naughty empress herself, Catherine the Great. So let's begin. First, Catherine the Great is famously of Russia. However, she was not Russian. She was German. I know, first plot twist, first of many plot twists that we will get in this episode because, yeah, Catherine, a spicy woman, we will soon learn. She also had a total momager. When I think of Catherine's mom, I can't help but think of Kris Jenner holding her phone out while Kim is posing for Playboy and saying, "You're doing great, sweetie." Like, that's just the dynamic I see between the two.
Accurate.
So Catherine's mom, she does what all momagers with hot, young, noble daughters do. She starts hustling to get Catherine a fancy marriage. And she, like Kris Jenner, like the devil works hard, but Kris Jenner works harder. Same for Catherine's mom. Her hustling worked. She did get Catherine a fancy marriage, and she got one that must have succeeded beyond her wildest dreams, from a prestige perspective, at least. In terms of giving her daughter fulfillment and happiness and a husband who wasn't a complete dolt.
Not so much.
Maybe not such a smash success on those fronts. So her mom pushes Catherine towards the heir to the Russian throne, Peter III. This kid.
Oh, man.
Jesus fucking Christ. Okay. So his two main interests are that he still plays with toys, including toy soldiers, which I think when you're a teenager, bit of a cry for help, maybe immaturity coming up there. But he also has a drinking problem. All to say, Peter III, walking nightmare already. But Catherine wants that crown. Even when her mom gets kicked out of court for what fucking else? Meddling.
I love it.
Of course. Catherine, you know, she's abandoned effectively in a foreign country. You know, she puts on her big girl pants and she charms her way into staying in the Russian court. She stays up late and teaches herself Russian. No Duolingo in the 1700s, people. She does it all by herself.
Wow.
She goes so hard that she gets pneumonia from her cold late night study sessions. Like, she is committed. She wants to be queen of Russia.
I'm actually doing Duolingo for Russian right now. Not the easiest language.
Of course you are. That's the most on-brand Dancy activity. All you need to know about Dancy. She loves the Romanovs and she's on Duolingo for Russian. Okay, back on track. Catherine, all her late night study sessions work. She and Peter get married in 1745, when obviously they're both still teens. Too young. So Catherine already doesn't like Peter.
Everything's on the surface with Peter, you know? He's not hiding anything.
What you see is what you get.
Yeah, yeah. And what you see is a big himbo.
We actually are planning a season on himbos at some point down the line, so stay tuned for that.
I would love it.
In the meantime, I mean, Catherine liked a himbo, but she liked a himbo in small doses. I don't think she would have married a himbo.
Yeah, and Peter, as we'll get to, like, Peter wasn't that much of a looker either, so it's not like he had that to recommend him.
Oh, we'll get to that. So Catherine already doesn't like her husband, and a lifelong commitment did not help that dislike. She effectively ignored her husband, just like completely ignored him. And she spends most of her time reading philosophy. Oh, and one other thing. banging her manstress, Sergei Saltykov.
Ooh, salty.
He was her salt bae. They are hot and heavy, and they're not being subtle. Because get this, not only was Catherine full-on banging another man at court, she, like, was not extending any favors to Peter himself. She actually hated him so much that she refused to go to bed with him.
Mm.
Like, she would not give him any...
satisfaction.
Any satisfaction. She actually lost her virginity not to her husband, but to her lover.
That's incredible, though. Like, I love that.
Me too. I think that the pressure to submit to your husband and give him just free rein to touch you in any way he desires, That's so great that Catherine was like, look, I get to go to bed for the first time once. I'm going to do it on my terms and have my fun with Salt Bae. Respect to you, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
However, eventually... like, Catherine knows that she's the Empress of Russia. Peter's the Emperor of Russia. They need a male heir. We love a male heir. So eventually they have a rumble in the hay. But I will say, she seems to have locked him out pretty effectively because they have their first child 9 years after they get married.
Oh my goodness.
I know. It's so good. And I am obsessed with this next fact. So for the longest time, Peter was like, oh, that baby is not mine. I know that Catherine is banging the Salt Bae guy.
Yeah, for the last decade, she hasn't been super discreet about her affair.
Like, I'm just weighing the odds, thinking about the probability, and I don't think the boy is mine. However, scholars disagree for an incredible reason. The kid was so ugly that it had to be Peter's. I cannot.
Oh, I love that, too.
It's so it's good.
So good. So, at this point, Catherine's got an heir and a legitimate one.
Despite her best intentions.
Yeah, despite her best efforts, she has a legitimate heir to the throne. And in 1762, Peter actually... finally becomes Tsar of all Russia, and Catherine becomes his consort. Yay! You know, everything's yay! Coming up Catherine and Peter, right?
Nervous laugh.
Because Peter is not the greatest ruler. Again, this guy was really immature, and he did not have the capability of running a country, really. He did stuff like, he liked to throw cannon fire at Catherine's apartments. He would drill the male servants early in the morning and kind of wake everybody up. Like, everyone in the palace was pretty annoyed with him.
So annoying, like a bad roommate.
Yeah, or like a little brother that you hate. Like, he's given like noogies to everyone all the time. On the international stage, wasn't much better. He started backing like some of Russia's longest held enemies just kind of because. And everyone in court was like, wait, what? Like, no, we hate those people and they hate us. Like, why is this now about them?
He's trolling his own country.
Yeah. So yeah, he just like wasn't a good ruler. No one had a whole lot of faith in him, least of all Catherine. This change to becoming Tsar and Catherine becoming consort was not good for the royal marriage. Catherine would call him the idiot and the drunkard. And she's also, of course, still romping around with various lovers. She actually has another child around this time, probably still with Peter, but that girl died in infancy. So maybe there's still some bedroom relations going on, but few and far between. And 6 months after Peter hits the throne, they're living in separate palaces. Like, these people hate each other so much, they have to have two separate mansions like away from each other.
Wow.
Catherine uses this alone time to great effect. She uses it to start plotting Peter's downfall.
Bum, bum, bum.
She gathers a bunch of men around her, people loyal to her in her own kind of mini microcosm court. And of course, Peter has his own people kind of working for him. Like, they're both kind of aware that they're plotting each other's downfall in some way. And it's maybe just a matter of time. Now, actually, one day Peter and his men caught one of Catherine's kind of spies. And Catherine immediately is like, okay, we gotta go. We gotta move now, people. This kicks off probably... before the Russian Revolution, the most infamous coup d'etat in all of Russia. Catherine runs to the army and she plays the vulnerable woman and begs them to help them get rid of her unhinged husband, sort of pleads with them to do it.
Weaponizing femininity. I love to see it.
Yes. And a lot of these men are already on her side or not sympathetic to Peter. Like, she knows who she's talking to. After getting the army on her side, she then goes to the clergy, who she's already got in her pocket, and they're there to ordain her as ruler. So on the left hand, she's got the might, the force, the army. And on the right hand, she's got the divine right with the clergy. So she's like two-fisting Peter's
double-fisting power away from her own husband.
Yes. And in the blink of an eye, like, this happens so, so fast. Like, Peter is not ignorant that his wife is plotting something, but he does not have time to react. He's immediately arrested, and Catherine forces him to sign an abdication agreement. Bam.
Done.
Done. And the whole world was like, whoa, what? What?
Yeah, like whiplash.
Catherine's ruler now, and Peter's arrested. Then it gets real dark. So 8 days after this coup shocks the world, Peter turns up in his cell dead. And he's only 34 at this time. So, you know.
I love a suspiciously convenient death.
Yeah.
Don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. Exactly.
Not suspicious at all.
Now, there was an autopsy. There was some, you know, there's some nominal reason for his death. Some people suspect that a man named Alexei Orlov, who was the brother of one of Catherine's most famous lovers, that he did it. Mm-hmm. Some people suspect Catherine knew about this. Others believe Orlov was just acting out of turn. I guess there's a buffet of choices. Like, maybe you do believe that Peter just died from natural causes. I do not.
I'm going to say no to that one.
Very, very convenient timing. But regardless, we still don't know the exact details of that day. Just that at the end of this, Catherine is now ruler. She's got the army on her side. She's got the holy men on her side. Her husband is not arrested. He's just totally dead now. No one is standing in her way.
So what does Catherine do when she has all this new power? Well, she gets to work on some good old-fashioned court scandal. So this is the part of the podcast that I call... I don't have a name for it. This is the this is just the part where I tell you about court scandal. I need to take an improv class, you guys.
Well, it's almost like there are no words for it because the range of these scandals is...
Yeah, like, what else could be an umbrella term for this? Like, it's just insane.
Olivia Pope would faint. It's also my favorite part of this podcast because this is, yeah, Catherine in her full power. And she's like, what am I going to do? Fuck. Shit. Up.
Yeah, like, honestly, strap in. Because nothing compares to the Russian court. We've got a love child, assassinations, affairs, mommy issues, people getting stood up at the altar, imposters, rebellions, even fucking resurrections.
What? I don't.
Yeah, like, here we go. All right. Scandal number one, love child. So Catherine's first two kids were definitely Peter's. One of them passed away, but we do have that all important male heir. So we're good. However, her third child, that baby daddy was Grigory Orlov, Catherine's hunky, hunky lover.
Yeah, brother of the guy that killed her husband.
Also that. He was useful in many ways to her. So, to recap, we have a love child. Scandal number two, assassinating an innocent man. And man is putting it generously. I'd go with more like a child. So, when Catherine ascends to the throne, you know, theoretically, Peter just conveniently drops dead, but, you know, I think some coin exchanged hands to make that happen. So Catherine is clearly on the lookout for people who might come out of the woodwork and threaten her new power. So she orders the killing of another potential combatant for the throne, someone named Ivan VI. This man's life, he was a 23-year-old who had already been overthrown and put in jail for his entire life. And so after all this, Catherine just, like, deals the final blow, the parting shot. So she gets him out of the way, too. So to recap, assassinating like an innocent man child who has like been locked up for his entire life and gone insane. Like,
this is where I think, yeah, I don't think Peter died of natural causes at all. Like, that man never did anything good for Catherine. Why would his last thing on earth to be conveniently to die for it? This woman is willing to kill, like, this stunted child prisoner. Why wouldn't she be willing to kill the husband she hated?
Peter did not die of natural causes. That is this podcast stance. Scandal 3. Related to Peter not dying from natural causes and related to Catherine's hatred of Peter. Russian harem. Catherine constantly had a retinue of hot nerds and military jocks on call for her personal pleasure. She hired people as professional ticklers to get her in the mood.
Which, by the way, is like, that's like a Russian court thing, period. Like, she actually wasn't breaking any molds there. They loved foot ticklers. That was a thing in the Russian court.
Kinky.
Also, Catherine made one of her old boyfriends, Potemkin, who she called the Golden Cock, and her professional bonbon. Her nickname game is on a whole nother level. But anyway, once she got a little tired of him, because he was like dirty hot and I guess she wanted something a little different, she made him become her personal matchmaker. So she like outsourced finding new boyfriends to one of her old boyfriends, which is such a power move. So he'd like screen these hotties and see which ones were appropriate to send along to Catherine.
She's like, you know what I like.
Oh, and Dancy, is it true that Catherine had like her ladies in waiting test out her potential male lovers, or is that just a rumor?
It's so hard with her to separate that out. I don't know.
But there was a rumor that before she'd go to bed with one of her, you know, new boyfriends, one of her ladies-in-waiting would take the goods out for a spin and see if they were ready, worth Catherine's time.
Yeah. Yeah, take a little test drive. That was the rumor, yes.
Incredible. So to recap, love octagons happening in the Russian court. Scandal 4, stood up at the altar. Ish. That's a bit of clickbait. So Catherine hooked her daughter up with the King of Sweden, and she planned this huge engagement ball. Like, everyone was invited. It was a huge event. But the King of Sweden just never showed up. Like, he just never showed up. So he just ices out Catherine's daughter, and Catherine is left looking like a fool. So I'm just going to count that as left at the altar. Mm-hmm, like, come on. And this scandal is like a bit of a nesting doll scandal, because this daughter was also born way after Peter died, and Catherine never said who the dad was. So yes, we have a bonus love child in the mix.
Love child. No, it's definitely Peter's child, and I did not kill him.
Yeah, Peter's ghost came back, and we had a wild night a la Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze, and my daughter Elizabeth is the result of this. This sounds like a lot, but let's get into Scandal 5, and hey, maybe that version of events might hold a little more water, because it turns out that 18th century Russia was down to believe in ghosts. So Scandal 5, which I can only describe as Catherine destroys the ghost of her dead husband. In 1773, a man named Pugachev comes out of the woodwork and is like, yes, my name's Pugachev, but I am actually Peter III, come back from the dead and plopped into this new body, and now I'm here to reclaim my crown.
Chill, man. Do you.
I love Russia. Catherine tarries with him for a year, and then she's like, all right, entertainment factor gone. And she goes really hard on Pugachev. She puts him in a metal cage. She invites people to gawk at him. Then she cuts off his head. Then she draws and quarters his body.
I think she's like, this is what I would have liked to do to my husband.
Oh, good.
There's some psychological projecting going on in my head.
Yeah, yeah. I was also thinking that, I mean, theoretically, Peter came back from the dead once, right? Which just makes super sure that his vessel can't make it back again. All right. So Scandal 6, the Poniatowski disaster. One time, Catherine gave an old boyfriend Poland to rule, just a tiny gift. Then he betrayed her by turning Poland against Russia, so she made him depose himself. Oh. That is the SparkNotes version. This took a lot longer, but like wacky shenanigans all over the place. And finally, Scandal 7, mommy issues.
I love all my children equally. I don't care for Joe.
Catherine low-key hated her firstborn son, Paul, maybe because he looked a lot like Peter. She was also pretty petty about
hating her own child. This woman, honestly.
Around the same time, she gave one of her friends a 500,000 ruble gift.
Then she gave her own firstborn child a cheap watch.
Ooh.
Dancy has a really good joke about this in the article where she just goes, I think you can afford the Rolex.
I laughed still.
That's a good joke. I like that joke.
Thanks.
So then Paul has a son named Alexander, and this is the point at which Catherine destroys her firstborn son's one remaining thread of self-esteem. Like, he's got one left and she's coming in with scissors. She dotes on Paul's son and straight up tells Paul that when she hands over power, she's just skipping Paul and she's gonna give it straight to Alex.
Which, like, so I'm not super, super clear on Russian lineage, like Russian succession rights, but it's different than in like super Western Europe. Like, it's a lot of electing. It's a lot more electing than you think. It's more like an electorate sometimes. So that may not have been an empty threat, but she may have been able to try to do that if she wanted.
Unbelievable. So yeah, those are the court scandals, and I love it. I'm also just going to mention the Potemkin villages here. When Catherine went on these tours of Russia, it was baffling. It was like a weird RPG. She would make people erect these faux villages and hire people to act like cheerful peasants. And then when she left, like when her tour moved on, they'd have to take the village down and erect it later on so she could do it again.
Oh, man. I think I've seen that ruddy-cheeked, smiling peasant before.
This cheerful washerwoman looks familiar. Maybe because she's not actually that cheerful or real. It's a whole thing. I don't know.
Catherine's reign. There's some international drama thrown in there. There's some interpersonal drama. But really, just end to end there. Incredible. This lady did not stop. And she really didn't. She had the energy. I look at her life and I'm like, how do you have the energy for this?
I barely had the energy to get through talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. And unlike a lot of historical figures, her later life is just as balls to the wall as the rest of that. You know, her early work, I like her early work, but her later work is also great too.
The entire of, very solid, consistent.
For one, she has a hell of a legacy. I mean, her legacy is colonialist, slightly. More than slightly.
And as I think the Potemkin villages suggest, like more than a little tyrannical and weird.
And that was, of course, by design. She had... A lot of her energy was spent on expanding Russia, on working into making it even more of an Enlightenment nation, somewhere akin more closer to Europe. Catherine looked a lot to the French philosophers like Voltaire and just that kind of continental Western. That's what they wanted to make Russia. And actually, to this day, you can really see a kind of Francophilia a lot of the time in Russia. Again, because I'm too Russian on Duolingo. a lot of Russian words come from French, like the word for library is biblioteca. I kid you not. Anyway.
Subtle.
So she did what she set out to do and did expand it a lot, brought a lot of Enlightenment principles to the nation. She was also a pioneer in science. She got herself vaccinated against smallpox, which was like a huge avant-garde move at the time. Everyone was like, what are you doing? She also made Paul do it too, so maybe she was just in case I die, I want him to die too.
Yeah, I bet she put Paul first. You get yours first. I'm right behind you.
Like her poison taster. Yeah. And this is a bit more of a personal side, but she still very much liked men late into her life. Her last lover was 22, and she was 60 years old at the time, which is incredible.
10 out of 10 horn dog. That's Catherine.
And one of, I think, the most representative quotes from her that really sums up her reign and who she was and her whole point of view, I think, is she once said, quote, "I'm an aristocrat. It is my profession." And I love this because it gives away so much of her rule, of her people, of her country. She is sure of herself. She's so spoiled. She's so confident. And, you know, for all these liberal Enlightenment principles and her liberal court, like in her head, she's like, no, the serfs are staying serfs. Any revolutions or any successful revolutions are going to have to wait until 1917. Like, this is what I do. And I am good at it.
She was enlightened, but in a way that you remember that enlightened and the word entitled are very similar. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do the thing where it's like, Catherine the Great was a bad girl, and that means she's a feminist icon. It's like, well, I mean, in the gender area, yes. But in the class area, this girl loved money and liked to keep it for herself, not interested in making, like, the serfs' lives better. Let's just be very clear.
Yes, yes.
Help, help, I'm being repressed, bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you see him repressing me?
She also had an enormous, enormous art influence. If we're also talking about, like, the money she liked to keep for herself. So the Hermitage Museum, the Hermitage, again, I'm just putting, they love the French. The Hermitage Museum in the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg, which, by the way, is absolutely incredible. Possibly my favorite museum ever. But it started out as Catherine's personal collections.
Flex.
The stuff you see in there, guys. It's just like, how can one person own all this? She also, she did a really smart thing. Or had a really good stroke of luck. She bought Frederick II of Prussia's reject art collection. He was kind of fobbing it off. And she found 13 Rembrandts in there. Like, just incredibly expensive paintings.
As, like, a devoted thrifter, this sends chills up my spine. The bargain. The thrill of a deal. Oh, wow.
Yeah. She also collected some pretty hair-raising art in private.
Kinky.
As you can imagine, Catherine had some very scandalous, juicy tastes, and she would put her more risque artworks down in kind of her basement. I mean, I this is nothing like you would think of a basement, but just sort of away from prying eyes. Things like Giulio Romano's sensual painting, The Two Lovers. And during World War II, German forces raided the Winter Palace, and they came across this friggin' legendary discovery. According to the men, they stumbled across an old boudoir of Catherine's that was full of quote-unquote sensual furniture. And I want you to picture just tons of chairs, tables, sofas with ornate, thick, carved dicks all over them. Dicks everywhere on these chairs, on these sofas, on these tables.
Imagine filigree, but instead of ornamental flowers and flourishes, it's just people fucking.
Yeah.
And so many dicks.
Just twigs and berries. Twigs and berries everywhere you look. And they took photographs, so if you so desire, you can Google. I actually do recommend it. It's something to see.
Oh God, same. It's incredible.
They're also, like, very beautiful in their own way. They are, though. They have this kind of rococo quality to them.
Oh, they're very fancy. Like, she did not scrimp on her, like, weird sex dungeon furniture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sadly, however, that furniture is now lost. Like, we don't know where the physical copies are, but because of some of these photos, we can actually see what they found that day.
And again, we endorse you looking it up. Have fun.
But I know what you're all waiting for. Because when we're talking about Catherine's later life, what she is really infamous for, in fact, probably just what she's infamous for, period, over her whole life, is how she died. Namely, there is a persistent rumor, legend, idea that Catherine, with all her exorbitant pleasures, died after having sex with a horse.
Ergo my intro with giddy up, took the reins, studs, stallions.
So on and so
now
forth.
Now you know. It all makes sense.
People, this is the thing. Catherine the Great died while having sex with a horse. Well, I hate to break it to you, but no, she didn't. She had a stroke in her bedroom and died on November 17th, 1796, when she was just 67 years old. But where does that rumor come from? I think is a kind of more interesting question, because there actually is some little pepperings of why this might have come into the popular consciousness. Her exorbitant desires, her exorbitant sexual appetite, but also, this is like kind of my low-key, like, favorite little tidbit from her. So she refused to ride side saddle. She really liked riding, but she didn't want to be, like, slow and dainty. She wanted to be fast and keep up with the boys. And she actually once said that when it came to horseback riding and not riding side saddle, quote, the more violent the exercise, the more I enjoyed it.
Kinky!
Yes, it's always struck me as like kinky, as sexual, and there is a little bit of a through line between that and, you know, this rumor that she died after having sex with a horse.
Again, a false rumor, but a legendary yes. rumor.
The cherry on top of all this is after her death, of course, her hated son Paul succeeds her, but he gets assassinated a few years in, making way for Alexander, Catherine's pick all along. So even from the grave, Catherine gets what she wanted.
And that is the story of Catherine the Great. A classist, yes. A basic bitch, kind of a little, but a sex-positive, power-hungry queen who really got hers. So I salute you, Catherine. I don't know, but I think she's definitely got a life worth hearing about.
Oh, agreed.
Thanks for listening to Yesterday's News, a podcast brought to you by Factinate.com. If you want to learn more about Catherine the Great, check out our article on her. The link is in the show notes. If you want to see my dumb history memes on social media, give us a follow on Instagram at Yesterday's News Podcast. We'll be back next week with another queen to tell you about. But until then, don't let the bland textbooks fool you. History was a damn soap opera.